The Sign of the Shadow. And time went by. Losing patience and beginning to feel the pangs of hunger, I went to the Rue Renoir to fetch something to eat, which we divided while watching the actors in the incomprehensible comedy that was being performed before our eyes. They hardly stirred. Each minute that passed seemed to load them with increasing melancholy, and they sank into attitudes of discouragement, bent their backs more and more, and sat absorbed in their meditations. The afternoon wore on in this way, under a gray sky that shed a dreary light over the enclosure. "Are they going to spend the night here?" I asked, in a bored voice. But at 5 o'clock or so, the fat gentleman in the soiled jacket suit took out his watch. The others did the same, and all, watch in hand, seemed to be anxiously awaiting an event of no little importance to themselves. The event did not take place, for in 15 or 20 minutes the fat gentleman gave a gesture of despair, stood up, and put on his hat. The lamentations broke forth. The two lean sisters and the workman's wife fell upon their knees and made the sign of the cross. The lady with the little dog and the beggar woman kissed each other and sobbed, and we saw Louise d'Ernemont pressing her daughter sadly to her. "Let's go," said Lupin. "You think it's over?" "Yes, and we have only just time to make ourselves scarce." We went out unmolested. At the top of the lane, Lupin turned to the left and, leaving me outside, entered the first house in the Rue Renoir, the one that backed onto the enclosure. After talking for a few seconds to the porter, he joined me and we stopped a passing taxicab. "Number 34, Rue de Turin," he said to the driver. The ground floor of number 34 was occupied by a notary's office, and we were shown in, almost without waiting, to Maître Valandier, a smiling, pleasant-spoken man of a certain age. Lupin introduced himself by the name of Captain Janniot, retired from the army. He said that he wanted to build a house to his own liking, and that someone had suggested to him a plot of ground situated near the Rue Renoir.
"But that plot is not for sale," said Maître Valandier.
"Oh, I was told..."
"You have been misinformed, I fear."
The lawyer rose, went to a cupboard, and returned with a picture which he showed us. I was petrified. It was the same picture which I had bought, the same picture that hung in Louise d'Ernemont's room. "This is a painting," he said, "of the plot of ground to which you refer. It is known as the Clos d'Ernemont."
"Precisely."
"Well, this close," continued the notary, "once formed part of a large garden belonging to d'Ernemont, the farmer general who was executed during the Terror. All that could be sold has been sold, piecemeal, by the heirs, but this last plot has remained and will remain in their joint possession. Unless..." The notary began to laugh.
"Unless what?" asked Lupin.
"Well... it's quite a romance, a rather curious romance, in fact. I often amuse myself by looking through the voluminous documents of the case."
"Would it be indiscreet if I asked?"
"No, not at all, not at all," declared Maître Valandier, who seemed delighted, on the contrary, to have found a listener for his story. And without waiting to be pressed, he began, "At the outbreak of the Revolution, Louis Agrippa d'Ernemont, on the pretense of joining his wife, who was staying at Geneva with their daughter Pauline, shut up his mansion in the Faubourg Saint-Germain, dismissed his servants, and, with his son Charles, came and took up his abode in the pleasure house at Passy, where he was known to nobody except an old and devoted serving woman. He remained there in hiding for 3 years, and he had every reason to hope that this retreat would not be discovered, when one day, after luncheon, as he was having a nap, the old servant burst into his room. She had seen at the end of the street a patrol of armed men who seemed to be making for the house. Louis d'Ernemont got ready quickly, and at the moment when the men were knocking at the front door, disappeared through the door that led to the garden, shouting to his son in a scared voice to keep them talking, if only for 5 minutes. He may have intended to escape and found the outlets through the garden watched. In any case, he returned in 6 or 7 minutes, replied very calmly to the questions put to him, and raised no difficulty about accompanying the men. His son Charles, although only 18 years of age, was arrested also."
"When did this happen?" asked Lupin. It happened on the 26th day of Germinal, year 2. That is to say, on the... Maître Valandier stopped, with his eyes fixed on a calendar that hung on the wall, and exclaimed, "Why, it was on this very day! This is the 15th of April, the anniversary of the farmer general's arrest." "What an odd coincidence," said Lupin, "and considering the period at which it took place, the arrest no doubt had serious consequences." "Oh, most serious," said the notary, laughing. 3 months later, at the beginning of Thermidor, the farmer general mounted the scaffold. His son Charles was forgotten in prison, and their property was confiscated." "The property was immense, I suppose," said Lupin.
"Well, there you are. That's just where the thing becomes complicated. The property, which was, in fact, immense, could never be traced. It was discovered that the Faubourg Saint-Germain mansion had been sold before the revolution to an Englishman, together with all the country seats and estates and all the jewels, securities, and collections belonging to the farmer general. The convention instituted minute inquiries, as did the directory afterward, but the inquiries led to no result."
"There remained, at any rate, the Passy house," said Lupin. "The house at Passy was bought for a mere song by a delegate of the commune, the very man who had arrested Dernemont, one Citizen Broquet. As Citizen Broquet shut himself up in the house, barricaded the doors, fortified the walls, and when Charles Dernemont was at last set free and appeared outside, received him by firing a musket at him. Charles instituted one lawsuit after another, lost them all, and then proceeded to offer large sums of money. But Citizen Broquet proved intractable. He had bought the house, and he stuck to the house, and he would have stuck to it until his death, if Charles had not obtained the support of Bonaparte. Citizen Broquet cleared out on the 12th of February, 1803. But Charles Dernemont's joy was so great, and his brain no doubt had been so violently unhinged by all that he had gone through, that, on reaching the threshold of the house of which he had at last recovered the ownership, even before opening the door, he began to dance and sing in the street. He had gone clean off his head."
"By Jove," said Lupin. "And what became of him?"
"His mother and his sister Pauline, who had ended by marrying a cousin of the same name at Geneva, were both dead. The old servant woman took care of him, and they lived together in the Passy house. Years passed without any notable event, but suddenly, in 1812, an unexpected incident happened. The old servant made a series of strange revelations on her deathbed, in the presence of two witnesses whom she sent for. She declared that the farmer general had carried to his house at Passy a number of bags filled with gold and silver, and that those bags had disappeared a few days before the arrest. According to earlier confidences made by Charles Dernemont, who had them from his father, the treasures were hidden in the garden between the rotunda, the sundial, and the well. In proof of her statement, she produced three pictures, or rather, for they were not yet framed, three canvases, which the farmer general had painted during his captivity and which he had succeeded in conveying to her, with instructions to hand them to his wife, his son, and his daughter. Tempted by the lure of wealth, Charles and the old servant had kept silence. Then came the lawsuits, the recovery of the house, Charles's madness, the servant's old useless searches, and the treasures were still there."
"And they are there now," chuckled Lupin. "And they will be there always," exclaimed Maître Valandier, unless Citizen Broquet, who no doubt smelt a rat, succeeded in ferreting them out. But this is an unlikely supposition, for Citizen Broquet died in extreme poverty."
So then everybody began to hunt. The children of Pauline, the sister, hastened from Geneva. It was discovered that Charles had been secretly married and that he had sons. All these heirs set to work.
But Charles himself?
Charles lived in the most absolute retirement. He did not leave his room.
Never?
Well, that is the most extraordinary, the most astounding part of the story. Once a year, Charles Dernemont, impelled by a sort of subconscious willpower, came downstairs, took the exact road which his father had taken, walked across the garden, and sat down either on the steps of the rotunda, which you see here in the picture, or on the curb of the well. At 5:27, he rose and went indoors again, and until his death, which occurred in 1820, he never once failed to perform this incomprehensible pilgrimage. Well, the day on which this happened was invariably the 15th of April, the anniversary of the arrest.
Maître Valandier was no longer smiling, and himself seemed impressed by the amazing story which he was telling us.
And since Charles's death? Asked Lupin after a moment's reflection.
Since that time, replied the lawyer, with a certain solemnity of manner, for nearly 100 years, the heirs of Charles and Pauline d'Ernemont have kept up the pilgrimage of the 15th of April. During the first few years, they made the most thorough excavations. Every inch of the garden was searched, every clod of ground dug up. All this is now over. They take hardly any pains. All they do is, from time to time, for no particular reason, to turn over a stone or explore the well. For the most part, they are content to sit down on the steps of the rotunda like the poor madman, and, like him, they wait. And that, you see, is the sad part of their destiny. In those 100 years, all these people who have succeeded one another from father to son have lost, what shall I say, the energy of life. They have no courage left, no initiative. They wait. They wait for the 15th of April, and when the 15th of April comes, they wait for a miracle to take place. Poverty has ended up by overtaking every one of them. My predecessors and I have sold first the house in order to build another, which yields a better rent, followed by bits of the garden and further bits. But as to that corner over there, pointing to the picture, they would rather die than sell it. On this, they are all agreed. Louise d'Ernemont, who is the direct heiress of Pauline, as well as the beggars, the workmen, the footmen, the circus rider, and so on, who represent the unfortunate Charles. There was a fresh pause, and Lupin asked, "What is your own opinion, Maître Valandier?"
"My private opinion is that there's nothing in it.
What credit can we give to the statements of an old servant enfeebled by age? What importance can we attach to the crotchets of a madman? Besides, if the farmer general had realized his fortune, don't you think that that fortune would have been found? One could manage to hide a paper, a document, in a confined space like that, but not treasures."
"Still, the pictures..."
"Yes, of course. But after all, are they sufficient proof?"
Lupin bent over the copy which the solicitor had taken from the cupboard, and after examining it at length, said, "You spoke of 3 pictures.
"Yes, the one which you see was handed to my predecessor by the heirs of Charles. Louise d'Ernemont possesses another. As for the third, no one knows what became of it."
Lupin looked at me and continued,
"And do they all bear the same date?"
"Yes, the date inscribed by Charles d'Ernemont, when he had them framed not long before his death. The same date, that is to say, the 15th of April, year 2, according to the revolutionary calendar, as the arrest took place in April 1794.
"Ah, yes, of course," said Lupin. "The figure 2 means..."
He thought for a few moments and resumed, "One more question, if I may. Did no one ever come forward to solve the problem?"
Maître Valandier threw up his arms. "Goodness gracious me!" he cried. "Why, it was the plague of the office! One of my predecessors, Maître Turban, was summoned to Passy no fewer than 18 times between 1820 and 1843 by the groups of heirs, whom fortune-tellers, clairvoyants, visionaries, impostors of all sorts had promised that they would discover the farmer general's treasures. At last, we laid down a rule. Any outsider applying to institute a search was to begin by depositing a certain sum."
"What sum?"
1,000 francs.
"And did this have the effect of frightening them off?"
"No. 4 years ago, a Hungarian hypnotist tried the experiment and made me waste a whole day. After that, we fixed the deposit at 5,000 francs. In case of success, 1/3 of the treasure goes to the finder. In case of failure, the deposit is forfeited to the heirs. Since then, I have been left in peace."
"Here are your 5,000 francs,"